So we want to show that we stick to times. Even if it has dropped by four minutes, we don't want just to ensure that we are on time. Let me take this opportunity to welcome the NPA. And a particular welcome to Advocate Willie Hofmeyr, who I'm informed will be retiring soon. I briefly worked with him in 1999 before he ran away to the presidency and then to the NPA. It's a long, illustrious career. I don't think that you will be, we are letting you off to rest. I think you are just being given an opportunity to contribute at another level. But I think I will be speaking on behalf of the committee to say you have made South Africa proud. You have made your contribution before 1994 and after 1994, and we would like to thank you. We would like to thank you. I remember we used to have long discussions in the Portfolio Committee of Justice, and we were the beneficiaries of your internet as committee members. We'd like to thank you for the hard work and your dedication to the people of South Africa. By the time you retire, you might not have an opportunity to come to the Portfolio Committee, but we thought that members of the committee, I think at the end of the presentation, those who would want to make a few words will be allowed to do that. Just as a word of, as a sign of our appreciation as a committee for the work we have done. So, members of, maybe for the sake of completeness, let's do it now. Just talk to Advocate Willie Hofmeyr as political parties before we formally hand over to Advocate Badoi to take us through their presentation. Advocate Mohammed.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Chairperson. We, of course, let me rise. We, on behalf of the both myself as well as, of course, our glorious movement, the African National Congress, we want to also express our appreciation to Advocate Hofmeyr. He's been not only a very active member of this House for many years, but also after this having participated and contributed immensely to the revolutionary duties in ensuring that we fight corruption and transform our criminal justice system as well as the civil justice system. So we want to express our appreciation, Comrade Willie, in your retirement. Of course, as the Chair said, we doubt that you will be retiring, knowing you. We want to say to you the work continues and the job is not done as yet. We've come a far way in ensuring that we transform this area of our economy, especially when it comes to the safety and security of our citizens and in particular our democracy. So we want to again thank you for your contribution, tireless contribution, not only in the struggle against apartheid, but more in particular in the democratization and ensuring that we protect our democracy and our constitutional principles. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Other members of the African parties? Thank you. Advocate Monalse.
Let me also stand, because I'm in a week, spoken when standing. And thank you very much, dear friend, for this opportunity, and also to say to the retiring candidate, Advocate Hoffman, for the participation active against corruption, but especially on the harvest for forfeit unit. And we will appreciate your service even during retirement to assist to help Advocate Batoni, because you have been long in these processes to assist our NPA in terms of how to forfeit assets of these criminals. And we'll appreciate to elevate most of the asset which was informed out of the country. How best can we gain them back to country? We need those resources in order to strengthen SF's delivery. So most especially, in particular, I would like your advice on the asset forfeiting of Stan Wolf property. And the guys who run and go with their money to Israel, where the Israeli authorities cooperating to make it a point that we must get those funds. And we'll appreciate your assistance, even if you are returning, just to plow back to the community, to the country. We don't want your brain to vanish away from the NPA. We hope you will cooperate when the Advocate Batoni contact you for assistance in order to show loyalty and patriotic the country. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Advocate Redenbach and Honorable Horn. We are just saying our word of goodbye to Advocate Willie Hofmeyer, who has been part of the NPA for a very long time. We were just giving parties to express their words of gratitude to Advocate Hofmeyer. We have just allowed the EFF, if the DA want to say something to Advocate Hofmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We apologize for being late. We were unfortunately held up by some important business. Mr. Hofmeyer has made a huge contribution to the National Prosecuting Authority, and I think everybody would agree. He's been treated abominably in the last time, used as a post office by his own admission, not by the current NDPP, but certainly by her predecessor. I'm not sure that can be properly made up to him. I sincerely hope that his skills are not going to be lost to the NPA, and that they will be retained in some form, perhaps in the new directorate. Certainly he's over the years built up probably the most extensive body of knowledge about asset forfeiture that exists in this country, and it would be an enormous pity to see those skills lost. Mr. Hofmeyer is still a relatively young man, and I've got absolutely no doubt that he still has a lot to offer and that he wants to contribute, because that's his nature. So I hope, Woody, that you're not going to be sitting on a rock somewhere drinking cold wine, attractive as it sounds. You've always been willing to step up to the plate, and I'm sure that you will continue to make both your abilities and your knowledge available, and I sincerely hope that it will be used, because quite frankly right now we simply can't do without people like you. But you have made an enormous contribution, for which we salute you, and you've certainly made a difference. So if you leave, you leave with your head held high.
Thank you very much. I hope, Advocate Hoffmeyer, you're not going to cry.
No.
before we proceed, if we can just give you a few minutes, so that if we don't see you, we would have said goodbye formally to one another.
Thank you very much, Chair. This is a bit unexpected, so I'm not prepared to say anything here. But I do want to thank many members of this committee very much for the role they've played over the years, both to assist the NPA, to protect us in some cases where we needed some protection. But, yes, I spent a lot of time in this chamber when the new constitution was being written, and I was actually in charge of the chapter that negotiated the existence of the NPA at the time, and we had big debates about whether we have a unitary structure or semi-federalist structure, which is kind of what we ended up with. But also, I think a lot of discussions about the Bill of Rights at the time and how strong individual rights should be, whether they are group rights or not group rights, as some people wanted. But I do think Parliament itself, I think, has been through a bit of a difficult time as well at times, but I think that we can be proud of our constitution and what it has delivered to our country, and in a sense how it has protected our country even during very difficult periods in the last decade or so. And from my side, I can just say that I think Parliament plays a critical role in our democracy. For us in the administration, you can very easily get caught up in the day-to-day work and not always see the bigger picture. So for me, one of the most valuable things is to come to Parliament and to be held accountable and to be questioned and asked uncomfortable questions. I think that's your job. And I do wish all of you the best. I'm sure that you will continue to hold the executive accountable. And let me say that I've got a lot of fun. I was not always very optimistic over the last 5 years. But I do think that our country is entering a new era, and I think there's the opportunity to really build a lot of good things. And I think one of the challenges is going to be to rebuild the capacity of law enforcement. And I hope Parliament, that has some input into the budget, is going to continue to assist to ensure that law enforcement is properly capacitated to deal with the challenges that we face. I do want to continue working after 65. I'm not the sort of person who considers that I'm doing nothing, but I haven't got anything specific in mind, but I think there's still a lot of work to be done in our country. But thank you very much. I really feel slightly tearful at the moment, but I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Advocate Patoy. We have welcomed you, and it's still a long time before we can say goodbye, so don't be jealous of Advocate Hofmeyer. For you, we are just going to open a barrage of questions. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members of the Committee, colleagues in the National Prosecuting Authority, members of the media, ladies and gentlemen. I think I should say at the outset that was a very nice gesture. I'm sure Willie really appreciates that. So thank you very much for acknowledging that work that he's done over the years. It was unexpected, but I'm sure very, very much welcome. And I think I do envy him. Let me set the record straight. But in briefing the committee on the annual report, as you understand, this is the briefing of the annual report, Chair, for the previous year when it was still the old administration before the change. But I appear here with several members of the National Prosecuting Authority that I will introduce Advocate Nambula Mahatle, who is the she's the Deputy National Director of Public Prosecutions. She was the head of asset forfeiture for a couple of years, and she's now heading up the legal affairs division in the NPA. Legal advisory section was my last one at the ICC, so there's small confusion. Hanika is our acting chief of finance. And then we have Lebo Baloy, who is presently acting head of the SPCU, the Specialized Commercial Crime Unit, at the National Office in Pretoria. She's taken over from Advocate Dobada. And Advocate Rodney de Kock, who is the DPP in Cape Town. Lelwa Makeke behind me is the head of our communications. Pierre Smith is the head of our sexual offences and community affairs unit, which is SOCA. And together with Lizelle Africa, who is the SOCA representative here in Cape Town, and Advocate Hofmeyer. And of course, Karen van Rensburg, who is at the moment acting head of witness protection, but she is here today, all more importantly, in her capacity as current acting head of administration at the NPA.
Before you proceed, I think before we conclude today, it would be important that we be taken on board as to at what point are we going to have permanent appointments, because we can't have an organization like the NPA being generations, everybody acting. We know that some of the appointments are not up to you, but I think we call upon everybody who is supposed to play a role, that for us to be able to have an effective national prosecuting authority, we must start stabilizing that area. We can't have a national director surrounded by all acting senior managers.
Thank you, Chair. We'll certainly address this, and that is a very important consideration moving forward. Chair, we have the honour of presenting the National Prosecuting Authority's annual performance plan for the period 2018 to 2019. Our performance, whether it amounts to over or under performance, as I've said before when I appeared before this committee, we will always do openly, transparently, and recognizing, as what Mr. Hofmeyer said, the important role that this committee plays in terms of holding us accountable to the people of South Africa. We welcome and respect the very necessary oversight powers of this committee and acknowledge the benefits of our engagement with this committee in terms of trying to improve service delivery, building confidence in the administration of justice broadly, but more particularly in the National Prosecuting Authority, application of the rule of law and transparency. Accountability is one of the four pillars of the new vision for the National Prosecuting Authority. The annual report of the NPA 2018-19 reports on the collaborative efforts of all those who serve in the NPA. As you're aware, Chair, the NPA is sub-program 4 of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. We remain committed to the realization of the goals by government through the National Development Plan and in giving meaningful effect to the long-term vision of the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster by trying to ensure that the people of South Africa feel safe. The NPA is at the center of the criminal justice system, and therefore it performs a really significant role in ensuring that everything we do as people's lawyers are in the interests of justice and is victim-centered in our approach. The 2018-19 financial year was characterized, I must say, by unremarkable performance with severe budgetary and resource constraints. And therefore, it's important to understand the context that we are talking about in this particular period. It was also, as you know, the NPA at the time was plagued by uncertainty also regarding the position of the National Director, There were allegations that it needs to deal with, and of course the loss of credibility weighed very heavily on the organization at the time, which is something that we are working very hard on to actually rebuild. So the performance and successes in some areas, which you will see there have been, were achieved as a result of dedicated and committed workforce within the NPA. However, budgetary and other resource constraints have taken its toll on the welfare of the prosecutors and other staff and on the institution itself. And this is evident by the high spend on employee wellness services, and I'll talk a little bit to that. The NPA has three strategic objectives, and one is, of course, to ensure successful prosecutions. The other key one is to remove the profits from crime, and then to ensure that we actually vulnerable and intimidated witnesses and persons are actually protected and that we successfully protect them. And that is one of the areas where we have done well in the last year and over several years. The NPA has four sub-programs, namely the National Prosecuting Service, the Asset Forfeiture Unit, the Office for Witness Protection, and Support Services, which is the administration. The NPS is further categorized into, that is the key part, part of the NPA that actually deals with the general prosecutions. The directors of public prosecutions from the various divisions report to the head of the NPS. So they're responsible for most of the prosecutions in the NPA. The NPS has further categorized services, and one is general and specialized prosecutions, the specialized commercial crime unit, which I mentioned to you, Advocate Baloyi is present, the priority crimes litigation unit, and the sexual offenses and community affairs unit. The NPA contributes to the achievement of the following sub-outcomes of the medium-term strategic framework, which are also contained in the JCPS delivery agreement. Outcome one, reduced levels of contact crime. Outcome two, an efficient and effective criminal justice system. Outcome four, a secure cyberspace. Outcome six, ensure domestic stability. And seven, reduce corruption in the public and private sectors. Chairperson, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the operational environment of the NPA. As I said, it's one of the critical pillars in the value chain, and our performance is really intrinsically linked to the performance of many key stakeholders in the criminal justice system. And in particular, these are the South African Police Service, specifically there, the Directorate of Priority Crimes Investigation, which is known as the Hawks, and then, of course, the Judiciary, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development broadly, Legal Aid South Africa, and we also work with, when dealing with corruption, very closely with the Special Investigation Unit, working with the Financial Intelligence Unit, etc. So we have participated in various structures to actually look at how we could better improve, well, deal with many operational challenges that exist and how we could actually ensure that we are delivering a better service. So some of the challenges I'll just outline briefly. Ensuring that trial-ready cases actually proceed timeously remains a key challenge. As you mentioned earlier, Chairperson, the inability to optimally utilize court hours does hamper performance. It's something we're looking at very carefully in terms of what is the cause of this and how can we improve that. The unavailability of key role players is still a major concern. Poor investigation, delays in finalization of investigations, unavailability of witnesses, dockets in courts, these are intractable problems that have been around for a long time and that we've got to look at how we could deal with. Shortage of accommodation in courts, resources, facilities, equipment, they are impacting seriously on performance in some regions. As you mentioned, the acting appointments, vacancies at managerial levels complicates management functions in some regions. which results in inadequate monitoring by senior public prosecutors. We have senior public prosecutors because of the shortages of staff. They are meant to be managing those below them, but they actually are required to go out and go to courts and do the actual prosecution, so it has a negative impact on management, and that has a ripple effect. Critical staff shortages are taking its toll. As I mentioned, staff, there is an issue of morale in the NPA, but we, of late, I understand that things are improving. The staff were very, very pleased to hear that because of the recent, we'll talk about the budget shortly, but because of the recent allocation that we received in the AE&E process, we're able to now advertise positions, and that has certainly led to many, many prosecutors feeling that there will be also a position for them to move up in terms of promotions, but that we will have the much-needed capacity. Apart from this, if you look at the impact of, it's not just about the shortage of staff, but if you add to that people taking leave, which they need to take for various reasons, people taking, staying away, sick leave, abusing sick leave, and people genuinely taking sick leave, these are all kinds of things that impact, that actually increases the vacancy level. But as I said, there is light at the end of the tunnel in that regard. We've also had the issue of newly demarcated areas where the relevant resources have not been allocated, and that's created lots of challenges in that regard. Shortage of foreign language interpreters and outstanding probation pre-sentence reports are all, you know, sort of institutional things that have had an impact on the speedy finalization of cases. The numbers of contract magistrates, you talked about acting prosecutors, but the numbers of contract magistrates is a problem. It deals with, you know, postponements being granted perhaps more readily, part heard matters, so that also does have an impact. I've talked about the budgetary constraints, so I won't talk more to that. I'll just briefly deal with what are the key functions of the immediate office of the National Director. It's on the slide, I'll just deal with it very quickly. We deal with the representations, the numbers are there, reviews, centralization of cases, mutual legal assistance issues, dealing with memoranda of understanding, and last year memoranda of understanding were concluded with the Public Prosecutor's Office in the State of Palestine, and also with the Supreme People's Procuracy of the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. We also deal with extraditions. I'm not going to go into the detail, but if there are any questions, we are happy to take them. Requests for mutual legal assistance is also managed from the immediate office. Requests for extradition as well. And so now we come to the issue of the NPA performance. Are we on slide 12, Colin? Are we on the right slide? Okay, that's one. Okay, so the high courts and the lower courts, if you look at that, I mean, we've got the number of cases enrolled, number of cases that have been finalized with a verdict, and the number of convictions. If you look at the regional court, they enrolled over 51,000 new cases last year, finalized over 30,000 cases, and many of them, we've got the figures for those that were finalized by way of alternate dispute resolution mechanisms and the number of convictions. And of course, then with the district courts, we'll also give you the figures for new cases, over 740,000, as well as those finalized with verdict, also ADRM and convictions. I think the good thing is that, well, the good news is that we have still maintained conviction, very, very high conviction rates in all of these, the district courts, the regional courts, and the high courts. I think what you will see, and I think we'll get to those slides in terms of the numbers of cases finalized, which has been dwindling, and that is can possibly also be attributed to the fact that we have had serious staff shortages. So where are we on? I just want to make sure that we are in line with. So the conviction rates with regard to is that the high courts. You'll notice that in the high courts, the conviction rate has steadily increased to almost 90% now. But as we all know, conviction rates and high arrest rate doesn't always translate into people feeling more safe. And, you know, so it's got to be seen in the context. It's a very important stat and a very important measure. But in the JCPS cluster, we have been thinking about how, together with SAPS and the NPA, we could actually be looking more at impact measures as well, which is something we will be looking at in the next cycle. And the regional court now, we've also, you see, there's been the actual regional court is much higher than what the target was set. So the trend is also an upward one, which is a good, we've certainly met the targets. The next slide, Karen. And in the district courts, it shows a similar trend. In fact, very, very high conviction rates there. We've 95.7%, which exceeds the target. So we are now on slide 16. So slide 16 actually shows the total of criminal matters that have been finalized. Am I on the right slide? In the last two reporting years. So we gave you the two reporting years so that you could look at the difference. You could see the difference between the reporting the year before last as well as the last reporting year. Cases finalized with a verdict, you notice, has actually come down by 17%. Cases finalized through ADRM, there's also a decrease, a decline. Dockets finalized has increased. Admission of guilt payments has also increased by about 3%. Other cases that are finalized in the courts have decreased by 2%, and there is a slide that talks to what those matters are. And so this is just actually a graph depicting those, and you see again the finalized one, which is the yellow cases finalized, the dockets finalized with the green one. So we've actually dealt with more dockets in terms of, you know, taking decisions in dockets, but if you look at the finalized figure, that's the verdict one, which is the yellow line, which is basically coming down. This slide talks about admission of guilt payments, and you'll see that there's a decline in payments of admissions of guilt, and appeals that have been finalized, also quite a decline. And the appeal certainly would talk to, again, one of the factors would be, losing staff in the high courts. These are, looking at new cases, which is the orange line. You'll see that is, we're actually getting fewer cases coming into the system, which is something we need to look at. So last year there was actually a decline at a time when we actually tried to increase that. So it's something that between the SAPs and us we need to look at, because if crime is going, is increasing, we need to look at why are the numbers of cases that are coming to the court declining. So that's something we're looking at. In fact, if you look in the regional court, which is the blue line, it shows a straight line, but it's actually a reduction of almost 20,000 cases in the regional court, which deals with your more serious cases. So, the decision dockets, you will notice, they have actually increased by, almost a third. And decision dockets finalized, there's also an increase, which follows a similar trend. The next slide actually talks to numbers of withdrawals, which have declined over the years, although we note that there is a slight increase in the last year. So we need to look at, that is perhaps a good sign, because it would tend to suggest that, your investigations are of a better quality, but we need to look at the issue of withdrawals in terms of why there seems to be an upward trend in the last year. As I mentioned earlier, there are other matters that are finalized in the courts, and these relate to formal inquests, committal of people to mental institution, and so we've actually looked at categorized all of those other issues that are dealt with in the criminal court space and looked at whether there's been an increase or a decrease in the numbers that we've dealt with. Plea and sentence agreement, you'll notice that there's been quite an increase in that trend line. It's important to note that in 2018-2019, there was just one case that had over 75,000 counts, and this actually talks to that. And so, we had another case of fraud which involved over 1,500 counts. So it could account for that increase, but we certainly need to look at, there has been some kind of you know, question around the fact that, you know, perhaps some of our more serious commercial cases have been, you know, finalized by way of plea and sentence. That's something we're carefully looking at, you know, whether these cases, you know, whether we should be taking plea and sentence agreements in certain very serious cases. What are the kind of sentences that people have received for these kinds of cases? Because it's very important that we actually send a strong message that corruption and economic crime does not pay. So we're looking at whether our also, you know, we've had measures in the NPA that talk to numbers of cases finalized, etc. So we're trying to balance between trying to finalize more cases but also making impact and ensuring that the wrong cases are not actually dealt with in this way, so that we're not sending a very strong message about dealing with these cases more seriously. We then deal with the organized crime cases. You'll note again here the conviction rate in the organized crime matters. The matters in brackets below that is actually the numbers of cases that, or the number of convictions, is that correct? And so we know, you note that it has a very high percentage, increased by 5%. In complex commercial crimes, we've also increased by 2%. But just to let the House know that even with organized crime cases, we've been having serious conversations with the police because, you know, the general sense is that we are losing the battle against organized crime. So those that do get into our space, we've got high conviction rates. But we really are looking at ways in which, together with the Hawks, and General Labia and myself have a very good relationship, and it helps to actually, and, you know, we're looking at ways in which we can really identify and try to make it. It's not just about numbers, it's about impact. So we're really trying to look at how we can better deal with organized crime cases, and you will, in dealing with the new MTSF, which government is currently preparing, we've been looking at how we could also look at measures to more effectively deal with organized crime, whether it relates to drugs, non-ferrous metal cases, and corruption are the three major areas that we're looking at. If you look at the next slide, the organized crime, is this the conviction rate? The target is 90%, and you can see it's well above that, which is a good sign. It shows that those that actually do come to court, they are being prosecuted, and we are, at the end of the day, securing convictions. Complex commercial crime, the target is the green line. You see, again, with regard to that, we have well exceeded that, but I think we, again, recognize that we have not dealt with certain complex corruption cases that we should have, and we can certainly talk to that later, but as far as the conviction rates are concerned, the NPA has achieved the targets. The next slide deals with people that have been convicted of corruption offences, and this is the top one is where the amount involved is more than 5 million, and you can see that we are actually below the target. The target was 30 persons, we are 17 at the moment. If you look at the numbers of government officials that were convicted for corruption, and this is just corruption generally, it's not the more serious one. It's 210 government officials, 115 national departments, 46 local authorities, 27 provincial departments, 18 government agencies, and 4 NPA staff members. Serious corruption cases, we all recognize, are very complex. They do take a long time to finalize. But that said, we are looking to find ways in which we can fast-track and deal with these cases quicker. This next slide just gives you an idea of, you know, how long it's taken for some of the cases, the serious complex cases, to be finalized. You look at, there were 24 cases with convictions, and it involved 54 accused in the past. We're looking at the past 2 years. And you look at, you know, just on these numbers, 3 cases took more than 2 years, another 3 to 3 years, 5 to 5 years, 2 to 6 years, 5 to 7 years. And so it just gives you, and I think we all recognize that these complex cases are not finished in a matter of 6 months. They do take time, but we're looking to see how we could actually deal better with those. That's fine, next slide. Okay, so, you know, we've actually, intensified. You will notice that actually even in the last year already, things were beginning to change. And there was, a more intensive approach to dealing with private and public sector corruption. In fact, for the first time, we started recording private sector corruption matters as well. And 143 persons were convicted. 100% conviction was obtained in the prosecution of money laundering matters. This is a really good statistic because money laundering is important, for various reasons. But one of the things we do recognize is that there have been a very, very small amount of standalone money laundering cases. And we're moving forward, we're looking at those matters because that relates to your illicit financial flows, etc. And so there's specific focus that is being given to looking at also at standalone money laundering cases, also in the context of our FATF obligations, etc. And we look at 100% conviction rate that was, as I said, achieved with regard to money laundering, 84 cases with a conviction. We're also looking increasingly at cybercrime, which is a growing international phenomenon. It is still, although the conviction rate is really high, 99%, I think we can be proud of, but the reality is that there's still a lot of work to be done in the cybercrime area. The bill has not yet been passed, and certainly we hope that that will be fast-tracked because that will certainly give more certainty and clarity to definitions of cybercrime, the various offences, the sentences. So it's really important that this bill moves through very quickly so that in the meantime, it's not like we're just waiting for the bill to be passed. We are looking at how we could build capacity. There's capacity needed both in the Hawks as well as in the NPA, but this is a very, very important area that we will need to focus on. And then we are dealing with conviction in sexual offences matters. You'll notice that, again, we've had a 6% increase in the conviction rate, in the number of victims or survivors that have been assisted by the Tutuzela care centres. There's been an 18% increase in the numbers. And the conviction rate with regard to cases that were reported at the TCCs has also increased by 5%. In the next slide, we simply show that, a lot of work has gone into dealing with sexual offences over the years. And so if you take the conviction rates from 2012, 2013, which stood at around, 60%, it has steadily increased. The trend line is up, and at the moment, it is close to 75%, which shows that, it's reflective of the many efforts that are being put into dealing better with sexual and gender-based rights. But once again, we have to recognize that those cases that come into our space are being dealt with properly, but there's still the number of reported cases, if you compare that to the number of convictions at the end of the day, there's still a lot of work to be done in this area. This is sentencing of the Tutuzela Care Center cases in the past 3 years. And you look at life sentences, there are the figures, you've got in the last year 264 life sentences, between 20 and 25 years, 188 in the last year, and between 10 to 15 years, 693. So that slide, if you just go black, Carmen, it talks to the fact that, there are very, very serious sentences that are being passed in these sexual offences matters. And the question again is, why are we not, still, the rate of violations and victimizations is unacceptably high. So a lot more work again needs to be done, even though, one would think that this would be serving the deterrent effect. But something more needs to be done in our society and in the criminal justice system. This just shows you an upward trend of the number of victims that have been assisted in the TCCs. There are various initiatives that we are taking to deal better with sexual and gender-based crimes. And the next slide actually talks to various engagements between the SAPS and the NPA. The National Commissioner and myself met recently to look at how we could actually coordinate our strategies to deal with sexual and gender-based crimes better. We're looking at reviewing the SAPS is reviewing their policy on this and their strategies, and we have certainly input into that. So there's a lot of coordinated work going on between SAPS and NPA to try to deal with the scourge, because at the moment we also seem to be losing the battle in this regard. The next slide also talks to various initiatives, like dedicated investigators and prosecutors, also looking at the backlog of cases. SAPS is also committed to looking at the cases that have been withdrawn together with us, what were the reasons for that, and do these cases, have the investigations been completed, if that was the reason, and should some of these cases be coming back onto the roll. The next case slide actually deals with regard to the conviction rate in murder prosecutions. You'll note that has increased. The conviction rate with regard to violent protests and industrial action, which was also set up as one of the measures, has come down. There are various challenges with this, and some of the key ones are lack of evidence, the investigations not being completed, insufficient evidence, and so the context of these, the context in which these crimes take place also makes it more difficult with regard to securing good evidence. But I think, again, there's more that can be done by the investigators to ensure that we increase that. The next slide talks to conviction rate in trio crimes. Again here, in this particular one, there's a slight decline in the conviction rate of 3%. It is still a high conviction rate at 82.4%. But once again, the trio crimes actually talk to people's feelings of safety, And so even though we still have very high conviction rates of 82%, together with SAPS and NPA, we need to look at how can we actually, trio crimes talk to house robbery, business robberies, vehicle hijacking, and so we really need to look at, even though we have high conviction rates, people are still not feeling safe in South Africa. So moving forward, we're looking to try to get measures that actually talk to that, so that we're not ticking boxes. Police are not sort of ticking boxes with regard to numbers of arrests. We are not ticking boxes with regard to conviction rates. And at the end of the day, people still feel very, very unsafe. So looking at trying to change that is part of what we are doing moving forward. You look at the trio. The next slide actually talks to the conviction rate with regard to the trio crimes. House robberies has, exceeded the target. The others, although business robberies, vehicle robberies, hijacking, although they have not exceeded or met the targets, they are still, as I said, very high. The next one is asset forfeiture, and with regard to these two slides, Advocate Mokhatla, who was the head of the asset forfeiture in the last period, will take us through these few slides. It is so that these are, you'll note that these targets have not been met, and she will talk to those as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will start on slide 39, which talks about the number of completed forfeiture cases. You'll see that the target was 500, and we managed to come with 495. And the reason for that is, amongst others, the lack of capacity that we had, the nature of the work that emanated from the Northwest Province, which became a project, and we had to pull the resources from the Northwest Province to work in Pretoria on those projects. The other reason is because in the Mpumalanga region, the judge president there at some point did not want us to move matters without notice to the defendants. Then we had to take the matters to the SCA to an extent that we at least then won the case, and now we can move the cases without notice to the defendant, of which the law does provide for that. Part of the other reasons is because of the high litigation and the type of...
Sorry, because we have quite a number of new members here, if we can go back to the Northwest issue, what were the issues in Northwest?
In the Northwest region, is the matters in the Department of Health, which then we only had two members working in the Northwest region. One was the regional head, who was operating as the head, but staying in Johannesburg. And then one of the senior state officials, the state advocate, was left alone in the northwest, but then he was pulled into the state of capture team. And then the projects that come from the Department of Health were done at head office by the national team, of which the national team is made up of people from Northwest, from KZN, and from the Free State. And some of them were from Northern Cape. The slide does take us to some of the initiatives that we intend to strengthen in order for us to yield more results. The Section 18 project, which is Section 18 in terms of the POCA, where a prosecutor will then move for a confiscation order at the end of the case. So we have the DPPs in all the regions supporting AFU in order for us to at least have those cases done by the prosecutors themselves to free up the capacity within the AFU space. And of course, we'll continue to engage with all our stakeholders in order to make sure that we yield better results. The number of freezing orders obtained, we have exceeded our target by 3% there. It's just the number of the freezing orders, and then you can see that the number, though it be high, it did not give us the amount that we were expecting in the last financial year. The value of freezing orders, as you can see, we got 455 million in the last year. We had planned for 10 billion, and this was because of the matters that were under investigation, the projects that were there in the ACTT space, of which those matters are still, even today, under investigation. So we're really overzealous and we overstretched ourselves there. But then the cases are there, and if you can remember, Chairperson, that there were presentations that were made to this committee as well as to SCOPA about the cases that have been prioritized to get us at least 50 billion, which was made up of 17 cases. So the target was really focused on that. Even though we overstretched ourselves, we believed that given the resources, we would be able to reach it. To an extent that we thought that we would get a ratio of two investigators per five lawyers, but then that did not happen. But besides that, it's just that the way the cases are. They're high, complex cases, they involve several accused, they pan out into different provinces, and they are corruption matters. And in corruption matters, we definitely have to pull our hands together with the police, with the prosecution. So we will have to then, as Asset Forfeiture, go by way of a criminal forfeiture, which is under Chapter 5, or given the powers under Chapter 5. So in order for us to play a cautious role, we need to wait for the charge sheet or the indictment to be at the stage where they are almost final, and then we can move with our restraint order. Part of the reason is because when you have taken people's assets, you have to take care of them, and you need money to take care of them, and you don't have that money. So those strategies that were then employed in order for us not to, on the one hand, be losing money whilst we're waiting for the case to be investigated to a point where it is at least trial ready. So the values of the cases that we have managed to get freezing orders in did not then give us the amount that we want. If we move to the next slide, which is slide 41, the value of the freezing orders obtained, where the amount involved is 5 million and above, for the same reasons that I have mentioned earlier, the complexity of the cases, the nature of the cases, the pulling out of resources from several provinces into a bigger project, which we call the State of Capture Project. And that's the reason why we didn't attract so much value, especially in those cases. The recoveries in terms of POCA, you will see there that the amount is 3.5 billion, exceeding the target by 2%. And the reason for this is because there were a few cases that we managed to get the orders in just before the financial year end. So in order for us to calculate it, we have to calculate the money when it is already in the bank account. So by that time, the money was not in the bank account, and therefore we could not calculate it for the previous financial year. That's why you see the amount of 3.5 billion as the achievement with the target of 3 billion. I think that is okay. The slide 42, we talked there about the success rate. If I can just explain a bit, the success rate is just the success rate of those cases that have been litigated upon. And then you look there, it's 98%. We are not counting the appeals, because then we can't count them and put them in the bag as successfully litigated. So just the successfully litigated cases. The value of recoveries relating to corruption, where the amount involved is more than 5 million, we yielded the result of 2.8 billion, exceeding the target by 14%. So the target was 2.5 billion. It's those cases that I mentioned. The value of recoveries now in respect of the government officials convicted of corruption, there, even in the last year, we managed to only get 410,000, and I do think that the target was higher than that. And the planned target for the last financial year was 2.4 million, and we were looking to also get the recoveries from the cases where we had appeals. Unfortunately, the cases were not finalized as at the time of the cut-off period to calculate any recoveries, so we could only get 172,000. And Chairperson, in the last explanation, in the previous explanations as to why we have not yielded any results in these cases, is that there are several restraint orders that are in place, but the cases are still ongoing in the court. I don't have the names of the cases, but the cases are still in court, and then we're hoping to get more money out of them. But then again, we're talking about government officials, and then in government, where government officials are involved, there isn't that large amount of money. It's mostly in the private sector that the money will then be recovered. Here we're talking about the convicted government officials. And slide 28 that has been spoken about will also be of assistance in showing us as to what are the reasons as to why we're not getting to the results as quick as possible. It's the long time that the cases take to be finalized in the criminal court, because we then have to wait for a conviction and then recover from the convicted individual through a confiscation order. That's all, I think, on the asset forfeiture chapter. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Before you proceed, if your target was 10 billion,
yes,
and you get you achieve less than 500 million, I don't think that you are overzealous. It's bad planning. It was not based on anything. And I think those are the issues that put an unnecessary pressure on the MPA. Because once you come up with a big target that you are going to recover 10 billion, and everybody thinks that there's going to be a lot of money that has been stolen that is going to be recovered, and then you recover less than 500 million. It's a serious reputational risk to the institution. I think it's bad. I think the variation, I think, is too big. I think it's unreasonably big. Because it's less than 5% of what we're able to recover. I think we'll need to look at that. I think we'll need to look at that.
Chair, I agree with you on that. We, in fact, interrogated these figures and went, you know, that was a very question that was raised in our conversations, that, you know, we can have stretch targets, but these were, you know, way beyond, and then it reflects very, very poorly at the end of the day. So it's something that, and you'll notice that even in the current year, already the targets have been set, and they were set based on other criteria that I, again, looking at it, I can already see that those are very, very ambitious targets. My understanding and Karen perhaps can, is that we may not be able to change those mid-year, but I think it's important to note that in as much as there's a lot being put in place and we will definitely see progress, good progress at the end of the year, I think we're again going to be seeing a serious red because of targets that I think, and you're right, Mr. Chair, we've got to look at planning and how do you better assess, because we know cases take long, you know, so we should have a better understanding of what would be a reasonable stretched target, but not a totally unrealistic one that creates expectations and then disappointments. Chair, the next quickly, the next one is the office. The next sub-program is the Office for Witness Protection. And on the achievements there, you'll note that, you know, we're still very pleased that no witnesses or related persons have been threatened, harmed, or killed whilst on the program. And so that is no deviation from the target. Percentage of witnesses and related persons that walked off the program, we had 4 persons out of 669 that left the program. And there are various reasons for this. It's not an easy life in the witness protection program, but it's still a very good, the fact that it was only 4 out of almost 670. And then if you look at the percentage of witnesses that have been successfully discharged and resettled, that's 100%, which is very good work on the part of witness protection. The next sub-program, well, dealing with the priority crimes litigation, I'm not going to go too much into this, save to say that you know, the case of Rodriguez is in court at the moment, and we were able to successfully oppose a stay of prosecution in that matter, and the matter of the murder of Nokutula Simelane has not proceeded because of various legal challenges. But the missing persons task team has been continues to do extremely good work, and the slide just sets out some of the details of what they've been doing, various exhumations, even in our neighboring countries where we've provided support. Legal affairs divisions, you know, it monitors, manages civil litigation matters, and unfortunately the NPA recently has had a fair share of that. It does cost us a lot of money as well, so we need to look at, but some of them we can't help, but we have to look at particularly the malicious prosecutions, how we can reduce that. But we deal with civil claims, they deal with various applications and agreements. If you look at the 7 civil cases, we've been successful in 62 out of 82 cases, which is 20% above the target of 55. I'm going to leave it at that, but for now the budget overview, Chair, and I'm going to hand over to Hanika for that. Hanika van Zyl.
Honourable members, whether it would be better to interrogate what we have received so far before we moved to the finances, or we must wait for a complete presentation before we engage. Okay. Honourable Tench.
Can they do the everything but a bit faster? It's almost an hour now. On presentation.
Okay. So, okay. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, NDPP. I will be quick on the budget overview. On slides 47 and 48, the two slides give us a brief overview of what happened in the previous financial year, our budget versus our expenditure. On these two slides, the one slide is a breakdown per economic classification, the first slide, slide 47, and then 48 is the same information, just broken down per sub-program in the NPA. Now, on these two slides, you will see that we had a environment of 150 million. This is where the Department of Justice assisted the NPA at the end of the financial year, moving funds to Program 4 to the NPA. Of that 150, 77 relates to compensation of employees, and 72 was in respect of goods and services. If we go to the NTS overview on slide 50, this is now just going forward over the NTS period. This information is as during the previous MTF. We're still in the processing of finalizing the current MTF cycle, so this is still on that information. On slide 50, you will see that our budget growth on an average of 4.87 over the next three financial years. Slide 51 just indicates a breakdown of our split of our budget allocation between compensation and the operational cost. Here you can see that 88.7% of our budget is compensation budget, and the rest is for operational budget. Slide 52 is also the same MTF period budget allocation, but this is a split per SIP program, so I'm not going to go into the details of that one. Slide 53, I'm going to stand a little still on this one. I think this is an important one. This is our budget projection for the current financial year, the 2019-20 financial year. Now, on this slide, you will see the first line, compensation of employee. Here we're saying that we now project a saving of 35 million. If you can recall in our previous meeting, we did indicate a shortfall of 27 million. The reason why this picture has changed around now is that the NPA has lost 73 officials for the first part of the financial year, as at end of August. And in this 74 people, it was high-level people. Now, this normal attrition rate has now resulted that we've got a saving. As the NPA, we couldn't really start to look at using this money to fill both, as our NTF budget for the next year still shows underspending if we continue paying the people that we've got in the system. We have now come to a point that we said that we had to look at the normal attrition rate in the NPA, and we had to start filling the post as the people leave, but we will have to make sure that we remain within our budget allocation for the next NTF period. So we're busy with a recruitment drive on this. Our goods and services budget remains under serious strain. Here we're still projecting our 60 million shortfall. We have implemented measures to make sure that we limit our expenditure and that we had to remain within the budget allocation. Slide 54 just gives you a history on our personnel shortfall over the past financial years, where you can see in the current financial year for the first time we're projecting a turnaround and not overspending. On slide 55, this is also important slide to note that the NPA did receive additional budget allocation during our IENE process. During this process, we've received 38 million for the investigating directorate, and then we've received 64 million for the off capacity, ICCU capacity, and then for safety and security, we've also received 38 million. So in total, we've received 102 million. Which is for the current financial year. This is also part of our recruitment drive, where we started advertising posts for the investigating directorate, AFU, and the SECU. The slide 56, this is our MTF budget proposal that was submitted to National Treasury and which is still now in the process of being finalized. This is the funds that we say we need as the NPA. Here you can see that we do ask more funds for building capacity. We're asking funds for our aspirant program to continue with our program. And then we ask the investigating director also, the 38 that we've received in the A&E was only for this current financial year. This relates to the carry through cost for the investigating director. And then also for all for SECU capacity and the safety and security, the funds that we received in the A&E will have a carry-through cost over the NTF periods. Slide 57 is just a detail on the NTF allocation request. And that's the end of the budget. Thank you, NDPP.
Thank you, Chair. There's just the resourcing. There's just a few slides left very quickly. You know, we have the moratorium on the filling of posts certainly impacted on performance. The vacancy rate was an average of 21%. I've talked to these issues. The suspension of the aspirant prosecutor program had an impact as well. We're pleased that that has now been resuscitated. And so I think we can pass on this slide with regard to resourcing. Are there any issues that I need to misconduct and disciplinary outcomes? That slide basically talks to the various types of disciplinary matters that are being dealt with in the NPA. You know, integrity is very, very high on our agenda in terms of dealing with restoring the credibility. So matters have been dealt with, but we still recognize that within the NPA, there still needs to be a lot more done for us to actually deal more efficiently with these cases and to fast-track them, to get them finalized much quicker. So our HR and labor relations capacity in the NPA needs to certainly be strengthened, and we need to look at various efficiency initiatives in that space. The next slide talks to the outcome of the disciplinary hearings. You've got the numbers of various written warnings, suspensions, dismissals, and case withdrawn, so those, you know, speak for themselves. Labor matters, the grievances, we had a total of 178, 90% were resolved, and you see other, you know, figures for precautionary suspensions, etc., and the cost of suspensions, which you would probably be interested in, they were a total of 10, costing the NPA 7.7 million rands. Integrity management, this also, you know, the slide talks to the various types of breaches with regard to integrity. You know, the IMU, which is the Integrity Management Unit in the NPA, is tasked to deal with this. We are again looking to how we could enhance efficiency in this space. We are also looking at this year, looking at how we could develop a stronger accountability mechanism so that we could deal more effectively with integrity issues within the NPA. And the last slide deals with key challenges that we face. The challenge of lack of credibility, which I've talked about, is something that a lot of work is going into to rebuild. I won't give details about this, but we're happy to take questions in the interest of time. Dealing with the budget, we've talked about enhancing values, inefficiencies, various inefficiencies, not just in the NPA, but also in the broader JCPS cluster. I think that is one of the key focus areas that we need to look at, is how do we enhance efficiency in the JCPS cluster? I mean, you know, monitoring of performance, you know, looking at outcomes, you know, I mean, the vision of the JCPS cluster is people feel safer in South Africa. The fact of the matter is people don't feel safer. So within the JCPS cluster, there needs to be a lot of, you know, evaluation of, you know, how we could deal with, you know, how we could enhance efficiency. You know, do we need to review processes, structures, etc., so that the cluster actually delivers on the objectives. And, you know, challenges in the criminal justice section, criminal justice system, they are huge. You know, and as I've said before, you know, I've left 10 years ago and we've come back, and it seems like there are many challenges also with you know, the integrated justice system processes. Use of technology, I think a lot of work needs. If we want our system to improve, I think there needs to be a very strong emphasis on the use of technology, which the justice system is not dealing with. But in addition to that, just dealing with general lack of skills, corruption, demoralization, apathy, all has a serious impact on delivery of services across the entire justice chain, starting with police, ending up correctional services. I think that is the last slide, Colin. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is the presentation.
Thank you very much, NDPP. Over to you, honorable members. Any questions, inputs? Honorable Jale, honorable Hisham, honorable written by Honorable Horn. Honorable Honorable Mfokeng, Honorable Advocate Laute, Honorable Janje, and then Honorable Neville Strahans. In that order, Honorable Jelle.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning to the team.
Speak closer to your mic.
Patrick, team, Chairperson, I have just a few questions and some comments. Let me start, Chairperson, with this one of just the comments, the challenges that we have on sexual offences cases. Number one, being postponed and withdrawn. I'm referring to sexual offences cases, Chairperson, very important these days. And also the minister, according to the minister on the newspapers, reporting that 65% of sexual offences cases, indeed confirming that they were withdrawn. And also, Chairperson, my comment also on the increase on, in fact, children, on cases of involving children. The police report here, Chairperson, gives us the stats that about 736 murder cases in this financial year, which involves children. And also, Chairperson, the report that 1,014 children were murdered in 2018-19 report, which also recorded the increase. We're talking about children here also, Chairperson. Another matter that I would want also, Chairperson, to talk about, it is about the killing of women. The research, Chairperson, says at least three women die at the hands of their partner daily. Advocate. There's somewhere where I'm going with this information, Chairperson. And also in 2018-19 crime statistics reported that domestic violence was a causation factor of how many is 1,115 crimes, murders of women. Chairperson, this information takes me back to the presentation of Advocate Fatoi earlier when he was giving us the outline. He kept on saying they are trying. They are going to make sure that the status quo changes. But I don't see that happening very soon, Chairperson, if we are, the department is not going to put more effort on this and also making sure that everybody is involved and everybody is working every day, Chairperson. People have to understand that we are, the country is facing a very serious issue when it comes to matters relating to crime. And also it is reported, Chairperson, that from the presentation that it seems as if the community is losing hope in reporting matters. And that is bad. It is very bad, Advocate. Here we have fewer cases enrolled, Chairperson, in 2018-2019. In 2018-2019, 772. In fact, it's less than 800 cases were enrolled. compared to last year. In fact, compared to 2017-2018, the course enrolled 10.7%, which means that we have fewer new cases in 2018-19. That supports the view that the community is losing hope in us. And if the department can't see that, then something must be wrong. Again, the decline in court utilization, Chairperson, how could really that happen in such a time like this? How can we have the very same important institution not utilizing the courts? So that tells you that the community is indeed losing hope on us. Now the courts, the judges, are now having, they're utilizing this, there's a fewer court hours on criminal matters. How is the community going to trust us and work with us? All this is what we have now. We also have the backlog that has been reported. Withdrawal of cases. There is no good thing, Advocate Batoi, as you are indicating in your presentation. There is no good thing. In fact, such words like good things, trying, those are the words that you are not supposed to be using going forward. I think you also, in your presentation, alluded to four key points in terms of your vision. I was going to, as a committee, I think we'll have to get the action plan, the measures, and also the processes to give effect on that vision, because we don't see this helping us. Time is against us, and I think we have to come with a plan, Chairperson, where we don't have to see the committee only when they have to come and report for this. I think in between, we'll have to have interaction with the department, one way or the other. I don't know how, but we'll have to plan that so that we're able to keep on checking, so that when they come next time, we don't sit here and also get the reports which will tell us that indeed they are confirming that the community is crying about outside. And we don't want you to confirm that. We want you to go and work. Every day, Advocate Batoi, the staff, we are paying staff. There's a lot of money. If you check it in the report, there's a lot of money that goes to our staff. I'm sure if you can one day miss maybe one salary a month, they will kill you for that. So therefore, because they will kill you and or kill us, let them do their job. And they have to be monitored every day. There must be a report every day. Because if there's no report every day, this will be the outcome at the end of the term. Maybe even the managers themselves, they have to, their attitudes have to change towards this. Everybody must make sure that way. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Isham Mohammed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. NDPP, thank you very much, Advocate Batoi, for an annual report. Very impressive, very informative, let me put it that way. Perhaps it's proper to start off with a number of questions, but more on the policy area. In the 2016-17, the previous annual report, because I see this one is silent, there was mention made about the engagement by the then NDPP with the ministry as far as the status of the NPA being a program in the Department of Justice in the OJCD, and whether it should be an independent entity with a separate budget in the reporting year. Has that died down where we were at? I know there was an amendment that was proposed. Perhaps you want to reflect on that a bit. Has there been any comparative studies done in models elsewhere, etc.? Then, Chair, the You would recall on the 3rd of October, this is an obvious question, somebody would ask this, and that is the Chief Justice questioned the methodology of the inquiry that uses the reporting on the performance based on conviction rates, and he went on to say that it might not be the best measurement in that it was the courts that convicts and not the NPA. Perhaps clarity for the citizens out there is very important on this aspect. Speaking about conviction rates, perhaps the key area for me is the whole number of average court hours utilizing. At the start, you mentioned in passing that it has dropped from, what is it, our information is at 3 hours, 6 minutes during the previous financial year to 3 hours, 4 minutes during the current financial year. And this has resulted in increasing our outstanding caseloads. We also know the backlog court cases have increased. And I know there's a number of reasons for that. If one looks at the snapshot of the stats, I note that the fewer cases were also enrolled in 2018-19, both in the district and the regional court, as well as court hours are fewer, as just pointed out now, and the increase. Now, obviously we know that there's a number of reasons for that in terms of the case flow management processes for that. How much it has to do with the judiciary, I don't know whether you want to venture on that, but let me leave it there. It still also needs clarity. What are the causal factors for that? Then, Chair, the President announced in his address to the Joint House an increase in the budget of just over R1 billion for the criminal justice system to improve, in particular when it comes to gender-based violence. Now, part of that arsenal would be our TCCs, and mention has been made about the possible increase of new TCCs. Now, we know also what TCCs involves, a number of critical staff, which is often not mentioned, your site coordinator, victim assessment officers, etc. And my experience has been that there are a number of these TCCs that's not fully equipped when it comes to HR. Has the process started in terms of the development of this particular budget, if any? Maybe we need some update on that pronouncement by the President. Then, Chair, with regard to the few other factors that caught my eye, and that is the process in identifying also the so-called cold cases involving sexual offences, in particular the so-called reopening. Has this task or exercise started, if any, and in what does it involve? Then, Chair, in the news recently we saw that there is a process of reopening certain key apartheid era deaths in detention as far as inquest is concerned. I'm referring to the Dr. Neil Agat and Dr. Hussein Afichi, and lately Imam Abdullah Harun submission. Has there been such formal submissions? And if so, what are the processes involved and what are the time frames to that effect, if any? Second last, Chair, I note with regard to the budget that, of course, the objective is to enhance, as we heard the NDPP indicate, in all the inputs at public fora, to enhance morale and motivate staff. One of the key areas of motivation of staff we also know is a common area, and that is to ensure that your vacancies are filled. And we heard the opportunity this current financial year alone, 73 middle management to staff that has been vacant. Now, high morale, how the high discipline is motivated by, certainly not by 21% vacancy rate, can never be. That's quite high in the history of the NPA, by the way. Never seen it, so the average should be about 11%, 10 in my view. And we need to know perhaps time frames of that which has been given a go-ahead for. What are those statistics in terms of the establishment? We're talking about both admin as well as professionals, notwithstanding the fact that we know NPA is highly HR-driven, but the CEO ratio of goods and services 89 to 11 is still a bit high. Current knowledge should be about 15% at least, not 11. But the point I'm making is that vacancies is critical, and we need to get some kind of empirical evidence in terms of the type of vacancies and time frames is very key. Because this needs, while we're prosecuting, your arsenal will be only as good as your ability to drive the machine itself. So I just wanted to get some focus or some perspective on that. Chair, lastly, I already covered the average court hours, but just on, there's other negative aspects. And again, we feel from the communication perspective, I know we can never enough communicate, but it's important that certain aspects are put on record for the public in particular, and also engagement. And that is the life is in the many tragedy cases not being prosecuted. What informs, we know there was insufficient evidence, as pointed out, but that's a very vague term for public, insufficient evidence. We need to, the era of where the DPP or whoever says, I refuse to prosecute, is long gone in a democracy. We've got to give empirical evidence, or rather information at least general, so people can make sense of what does it mean. I think that's important. And then also with regard to negative publicity in terms of internal matters at the administrative level, we saw is it Lipinski, somebody keeps upcoming, and everybody, media just drives it. I think that matter should be finalized, and I know there may be complications. So thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, for starters, my questions are directed at the National Director. Good morning, Kit Choi. Just for starters, in your presentation, you have page weight on page unnumbered, which set out the directors of public prosecutions and the special directors of public prosecution. There are 11 directors of public prosecution, 6 of whom are currently acting, and 5 special directors of public prosecutions, 5 of whom are currently acting. So it's not a good state of affairs, I'm sure you'll agree. Don't need me to tell you that, but I would like to know what your strategy is in changing this. Bearing in mind that I'm perfectly aware that you have a very small basket to choose from. This matter has been raised by other members, but it's important, and so I'd like to go there as well. You speak of a high conviction rate by district courts, regional and high courts, but what does this mean? High conviction rates, I'm sure you'll agree, are largely meaningless. If you prosecute one case a year and you get a conviction, you've got 100% conviction rate. It means absolutely nothing. We need to know how many cases came in, what happened to them, how long did it take to get to where they are. That's the kind of information that we need to make sense of the stats that you bring us. The crime statistics of 2019 tell us that 2.1 million cases were reported in the last financial year. Dockets presented to the NPA amounted to 964,897. The NPA declined to prosecute in 508,455 of those. 329,387 were sent back for further investigation. So you ended up prosecuting 124,654 out of 2.1 million cases reported. There's got to be a better way of dealing with these stats. That we don't see the picture when you come to us. The Chief Justice wisely or unwisely expressed a view on it. I really do want to suggest that you have a serious think about how these stats are reported. To say that you have high conviction rates measured in terms of percentages, we all know means absolutely nothing. And it's a way of disguising poor performance, and we all know that. So you know, don't do it. You report that you're negotiating with the Public Prosecution Office of the State of Palestine with regards to mutual legal assistance. I'd be interested to know with whom you're negotiating. Is it with the Palestinian Authority, or is it with Hamas? The court hours have dropped, the backlog has increased. What do you propose to do about this situation? It's an ongoing situation. You'll agree with me that you'll agree with me that the dropping court hours is largely as a result of a lack of discipline in the National Prosecuting Authority. Prosecutors arrive for work late, they leave early. I'm not suggesting that they're the only culprits, but they're the ones for which you're responsible. And you know, that really does need to be addressed. I'm not suggesting that it's all prosecutors, and I'm the first to concede that there are thousands of prosecutors who go to work every single day and work very hard to produce their very best under very difficult circumstances. But there are people who arrive for work late and who leave early on a consistent basis, and it does need to be addressed. The NPA works quite hard to secure convictions. The police work hard to investigate matters, and the judiciary works hard to do its job. And when this results in convictions of people, for instance, for public violence and malicious injury to property, which would all agree are serious offences, then the Minister of Justice goes on record to tell us that he will do his best to assist such a person in obtaining an expungement and a pardon. How does this affect the morale of prosecutors and the other players in the criminal justice system? And they go to work every day, do their job, and their work gets undone in a stroke of a pen. How are you going to motivate them to continue doing their job and tell them that it's important when it's clearly not always regarded as such? And this will pertain particularly to the matters of state capture, which I'll get to in a moment. How will you motivate prosecutors to work hard on what are difficult matters to prepare and prosecute when their work can be undone in the stroke of a pen? I find it astonishing that the person responsible for the administration of justice in this country can make such outbursts. The draft regulations for the investigating directorate, what is the status of those? Have they been presented? Have they been approved? Are we going to see some action anytime soon? And then while we're on the investigating directorate, what is the status of the investigations emanating from the Zondo Commission, and when are we likely to see prosecutions, even if it's only of the very low-hanging fruit? People are becoming impatient. I'm sure that you're slowly realizing the honeymoon is now over, and people want to see some results. When are we going to see some movement? Same applies to the style of prosecutions. And then I'd like to know if there's any action being taken with regards to the Bob Rock father and son who ran away to Australia. Is there any intention of extraditing them? And the same applies to Barry Tannenbaum, currently languishing in Melbourne, driving an Uber on top. Then judgment has just been handed down in Pretoria, ordering the NPA to implement OSD with immediate effect. What does this mean? What Do you have the budget for this? How will this affect other initiatives in the NPA? What is your plan with regards to this? I see you saying really, and did this just happen? Yes, it's really, and it did just happen. And I'm sure that you have a contingency plan in place for it. I'd like to know what that is. And then there's a matter that emanates from Limpopo, astonishingly. One second time, SC was struck off the roll in the Pretoria High Court some time ago. Second time, SC was struck off the roll in Pretoria some time ago. He's now reapplied for to be admitted to the roll, and this was granted by the Limpopo High Court. What was done in Limpopo, one can only speculate. However, in his court papers, and I'm sure that they've been sent to you because the people who sent them to me have told me they've sent them to you too, he admits to taking a bribe and to act to the detriment as a result of to his client. Are you looking into this matter? It's serious. You can't have silks being readmitted to the profession when they admit in their court papers to taking bribes to the detriment of their client. Is the NPA looking at this? And if not, I'd like to know why not. Thank you.
Honourable Hall. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Firstly, the Honourable Mohammed has referred to the TTCs, the announcement that there's to be a further rollout, and he's referred to the fact that a further rollout obviously is to be welcomed, but then one has to firstly ask as to the functionality and the appointment of all role players of the current ones. My question in addition to that really turns on the amount of 1 billion rand mentioned by the President when he addressed the nation regarding the scourge of gender-based violence. And if I understand it correctly, he, at the time it turned out that the 1 billion rand is not additional money. It's money that's supposed to be in the system. So I want some details from the NPA chair as to what amount, obviously being a key role player in respect of this whole fight back, if I must, these days you must even be careful to use the words fight when you talk about gender-based violence, but let's talk about this intensified program of action against gender-based violence. What amount is involved regarding the budget of the NPA? Where is it to be found? What other functions are going to be eroded as a result of reprioritization of funds to make up this 1 billion rand? Then, Chair, in respect of sexual offences courts, which we also know there's also to be an accelerated rollout. We also know that up to now there has been a bit of a hold up in respect of the sexual offences court regulations. Now, in his address to the nation last week, the Chief Justice mentioned that he signed it off with the warning that in future the judiciary wants to be consulted earlier and more intensely. Have you been informed officially that this is now a go-ahead regarding the regulations, and what is the NPA doing to facilitate the implementation of the sexual offences regulations? Then still, in respect of sexual offences and GBV programs, Chair, and I mean it has been said, so this is not criticism, you've said it yourself, that the conviction rates itself is not a fair measurement of our success. So there is a 97% conviction rate in respect of, for example, intimate partner femicide, 66 cases, but then the South African Medical Research Council, who's been researching this for 25 years, estimate more or less 1,100 women dying every year at the hands of their intimate partner. And you've also mentioned that maybe it's time to look into how we
measure the performance of prosecutors in a way different to just conviction rates. So I want to know what is the thinking here specifically, if we also look into the fact that you talk now about dedicated prosecutors, and then I would think it has to do with prosecution advised or guided investigations. So if we can get some additional information, more tangible information than what was on the slides, as to how are we going to ask of prosecutors to assist the system to function more efficiently. Then, while we're on the subject here of dedicated prosecutors, I see on page 80 of the annual report that there's has been a lot of training done in terms of the SOCA mandate, 1,060 delegates all in all, 587 delegates at the TTC sites. It is, however, interesting to note that we talk about dedicated prosecutors rather than specialists. So, yeah, I, for example, have a son who obtained his driver's license 2 weeks ago. And when I said to him that, yes, you have the license now, but now actually you will really start to learn how to drive. So I want to equate that to these training sessions. Is it an introductory session? And are these people who are now then going to be the dedicated prosecutors going to learn the job there now, or are they already specialists? And what are we doing to ensure that those who go there turn into specialists, for example, by ensuring that people stay there for a specific period of time? And in that regard, for example, how, because this obviously must be emotionally taxing work, what does the NPA do to also assist people working at the TTCs in that regard, so that they don't try to run away because of emotional fatigue? Then, Chair, in respect of the financial statements, it is noted, or we have noted, that from the AG's briefing to us, that the bulk of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of the Department of Justice, which amounted to 5.27 million rand in respect of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, was apparently caused by asset forfeiture curator fees. So I want please to understand what exactly happened there, whether there has been any consequence management that the NPA as a result embarked upon, and what will we be doing to prevent a repeat of this in future. Then in respect of the four specialists that we now seen in the media that has been recruited to assist the NPA in respect of, well, corruption, the special branch, state capture, I see that it has been said that they are to guide investigations and oversee prosecutions. So it would be helpful, I think, Chair, if we could get a bit more detail regarding their involvement. If they are to oversee prosecutions, for example, will they be the lead prosecutors in specific cases? Or are they only going to, for example, evaluate charge sheets and the available evidence and advise as to further investigations and trial strategies? And in addition to that, this... all four of them obviously would have, I would assume, very busy and profitable private practices. So what is the arrangement there? Are they to be put on a retainer? Are they to work on invoice? And in terms of availability, so not as to lead to further delays, what is the arrangement there? Then other questions have been asked in respect of state capture, but I just want to ask whether the so-called seven legs announced by the Africa Pretoria's predecessor, whether those seven legs are still there, are they running? From her looks, it would seem he's much like a previous president who didn't know about the details of his own 10-point plan. But she, just maybe to update us, I can read it out, but I've already taken up a lot of time. So if we can just hear whether another focus or another angle has been taken, or whether the seven legs are still there. And then finally, Chair, you referred to the whole issue of acting positions. And at the risk of insulting anybody who's part of the delegation here, as part of now the acting senior management, I want to hear from Advocate Victoria when she took up, I think it was sort of a common understanding that there was to be a clean-up at the top of the NPA. We know there's certain litigation still going on, and Parliament possibly in future having to perform certain functions. But having said that, I just want to understand what evaluations have she done in respect of people who's been more or less present at the top over the last 10 years to objectively and impartially evaluate their involvement, and to what extent they didn't prevent or even aided the erosion of the integrity of the NPA. So there's, for example, today in this team, people who in the past have been here, and of which my recollection was that they, in very specific terms, not only reported on the way they performed their functions, but also the way they tried to convince Parliament that there was nothing wrong at the time regarding the integrity of the NPA. So I want to understand what processes have been followed to independently and objectively evaluate whether who brings what and who have brought what to the NPA. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mufuke.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sure, I think I'm going to be looking also on the issue of the acting. I noticed that the very important, actually, divisions on directors of public prosecution, that you have almost about six that is acting, and looking at the special directors of public prosecution, all of them acting. I want to find out that Advocate Badoy indicated that you have a lot of costs, actually increased cost on employee wellness program. Do you have these people among this list going through the same? Because also you said it, that it's also maybe on the challenges that you raise, that the staff morale, then one will want to know, are they part of it? Then the next thing will be, I didn't hear you say anything about people with disability. And I'm saying this because you raised the issue of language, that you have actually the problem of a shortage of language interpreters. And my question would be, we've got the Pan South African Language Board. How do you work with them? Because they are for development and making things better in the country. And one would think that at the same breath where you say that you have a good relationship with South African Police Service, you should have with other departments on the interdepartmental relations. That is one. And on the issue of high conviction rate, it's welcome, but the challenge will be, are you excited about it when you still have a parole system that is actually not pleasing anyone? Because you have a high conviction rate and people say yes, but what is going to happen? Are you looking at the legislation changing into the system of parole? On the budgetary constraints, surely you need courts. But I don't know if you also do the monitoring of courts that are being built in the country. I've seen one court in Mamelodi that has been standing halfway. And if one can want to understand what is happening, noting what the Chief Justice has said the other day, that the sexual court has been opened, but he was also not knowing about it. So I want to know the state of your courts that are still there, but you don't know whether they are coming or going, because you really need courts. But as you need courts, at the same breath, when you need courts of sexual offences, the question is that, are you going to have specialised prosecutors to be dealing with those courts? Because I think we need that. Because when it comes to issues of sexual offences and gender-based violence, we need to have specialised people for many reasons. If you can find the magistrate commission dealing with an issue of a magistrate who has raped, you can still have a prosecutor who can do the same. So you need even those people to go through vetting. They should specialize, like everywhere we call specialize. Let us also specialize in this field, magistrate, prosecutors, and even the police officers. Because somewhere you are not failed only by the investigators that are internally in your side. You are failed by investigators that are also in the policy. That is a fact. You are saying that you are establishing and capacitating the investigative directorate. It should be the same on the other side. And that goes to the same into some of the convictions going for a very long time. I didn't get anywhere where you show that some of your challenges can be on the forensic lab, which is a fact. We know that it's not functional. And then cases of toxicology goes for 1 to 10 years. And maybe you can tell us that, is it one of the challenges that is there? Because if you want things to happen, it must start there. And on the issue of the bail at night, I think you know that there was an embarrassment in Gauteng when a man got bail on Friday because he's a powerful man, he's got businesses, he's got money. And this is happening even in the police. When you open when women want actually opening cases of high-profile people, they are never opened until they move to another police station far. And the same into this issue, that you ask yourself, why did this person wait on Friday at night to open the case when the wife was still in hospital? It's because nobody will be able to monitor. Are you looking at this bail issue of night into the GBVs and then also onto sexual offences? And even on murder, those are very important that we must try to avoid these things of the bails at night, because these are some of the things that says to you that people are losing confidence into the department. And on the witness protection, people that are walking out, living without even saying anything, don't you think that some of them are doing that because they're defeating the ends of justice? And if they come in, do we have the do and don'ts so that a person doesn't move in having a plan of doing that in return? And if they leave, they walk out, are you following to find out why did you walk out? Because by the time the person was staying inside, it's government money, it's tax money. That person is part of defeating the ends of justice, because it's also going to make you not to be able to prosecute because they gave a false information, maybe. And on the cold cases that Honorable Mohammed raised, are you having the budget? The president has announced on that and it's welcome, but are you planning on the budget on that? And how are you going to be working with the police on this? Because this one, it needs investigations, it needs capacity, it needs people that are specializing so that you can be able to can win these cases and give confidence back to the people. Lastly, do you have a roadshow? Why I'm saying this on stakeholders' engagement with communities? Because most of the time, our citizens don't understand their processes until they are now next to the courts, that they don't understand what is the role of the prosecutor in terms of an ordinary citizen. And I'm wishing to understand that people that are in offices, do they even give time to make people to understand as a prosecutor and just like your attorney? Are they received well? If that is the case, then maybe things can change for the better. Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Thank you. Advocate Mulaudz.
Thanks, Chairperson. My first question would be about the issue you talk about, the provisionally suspension, the 10 cases. 10 cases about the suspensions, which you said on the budget under review, you use 7.7 million. I just want to know on those cases, if these 10 cases include Advocate Jiwa and Moroibi's case in terms of this expenditure, and maybe to ask again further on those particular former members of your staff. As we're still waiting for the processes to be finalized by Parliament, are they getting paid now, as we're talking now? So the other thing is about the independency of the NPA. When are you going to separate the NPA together with the judiciary, not to work together in the same building, same offices, same passage, same parking? I think it also dent the independence of the judiciary, because in most courts, they are together, those people. And in the eye of the public who are not legally maybe matured, they can think maybe there is a coordination when they've been convicted. When is this going to be separated? Like in other courts, you find the prosecution are on the other building, which is very good. But in most courts, they are working in the same environment. Number three is about the witness protection. I don't know, can you tell us about this? How do this witness protection operate? There is a case in KZN, which was one of the councillor who was the former Secretary General of the Youth League, was killed, Sifiso Magaga. There is a witness who is not given protection. He was on TV yesterday. He said he went to the National Commissioner, he discussed the Minister, Presidency. He's not protected at all, while he's a chief witness of that political killing. Can you investigate that in the case of about Sifiso Magaga? The other question is about the SARS tax, those who fail to submit their returns to SARS, which is a criminal offense. In terms of the research, 30 million people, about 30 million who are active in SARS in order to submit the SARS returns. The majority of them, they are not doing that, and there is nothing the NPA is doing in terms of charging them to come and account for not submitting their returns to SARS. And there is about 11 cases with sufficient evidence after the investigation by the Special Investigation Unit on the SABC. So we just want to know that the previous head of the NPA promised to appoint a dedicated prosecutor to deal with all SABC-related matters. Can we be updated how far? Because it's a long recommendation report from SAU. The other one is about the NPA was called with the hawks by SCOPA on the previous financial year. And they promised that they are going to work together, more especially on the case of Stenhoff. But you remember on the newspaper of the Daily Business Day, they were so disappointed, the journalists there, by the way the CEO, Mr. Marcus Joster, who was very much relaxed about the action between by the Hawks and the NPA, not like they are very reluctant to be hands-on on the investigation of the Stenhoff matter. So we just want to be updated again, Alpha. The other thing is about the top lawyers recently, which were been activated, that they are going to assist instead of state capture. So they said the department will allocate 20 million. Which department is it? The DOJ, Department of Justice, or is it the NPA which is going to allocate this money, or is it Treasury which will get this money for this advocate? And can we be told specifically what are they coming to do to assist, which the NPA cannot do on its own? Secondly, there are political killings in KZN, and there were commission also there. Why the department or the NPA is not also getting some, the so-called top lawyers to assist them on those cases there, so that, that those killings must stop? Because we are going to 2021 election, they are going to kill each other more for this councillorship, you know. So we just want to know, why don't you prioritize also those cases of political killings, like we are doing to this state capture cases? And the other question about these top lawyers, Honorable Horn asked about them. So can we be updated about the Mutual Legal Assistance Agreement, MOUs, more especially for Gupta-related cases? So why is it so difficult to finish this thing? We know it's in the presidency and the Minister of Justice, but how far are you pushing? Because that state capture cases, and in majority, they are the one who are capturing the state. You are employing, getting the services of the legal experts to come and assist. But without them, the accused to come to court, I think it will be difficult to achieve the goal. So just want to know how far to expect that these processes for them to come back, and that the only thing to do is to sign this MOU for them to come and appear before the court. The last thing is about the funding of the NPA. In the last budget speech by the minister, he proposed that he's going to make it a point that the NPA must be funded privately, private funder to the NPA. How comfortable are you with the private funder funding the institution called NPA? And how neutral or independent are you going to be if you have been funded by the private funder without knowing their intentions of funding such? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Janje.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to, in my little contribution, just to do two things, Chair, if you allow me. That one, I just want to make a couple of proposals to the DPP up front. But secondly, I then want to ask a few questions that the team must answer, and I want to be a bit detailed on those kind of questions. Because I'm triggered by your intervention earlier on, and I'm not sure whether, and other members followed that, And I'm therefore not sure whether it will be justice for us to get the kind of answers that you're looking for, even if they respond. And here is a suggestion and proposal that I want to make in two parts, Chair. Because I listened to the National Director addressing the Black Management Forum over the weekend. And you've raised quite critical issues that I thought need to be followed up. You have raised the issue that there's a leadership crisis in the NPA. You have raised the issue about money leaving the shores of South Africa, lots of money. You have raised concern about the structure of the NPA itself, that it might not help what you want to achieve. But you have also raised, and related to that structure, the fact that a lot of work and prosecutions is done at a provincial level, and that yours is just a national review, which for me seems to be a serious dilemma. Now, it's very clear that there is a convergence of shrinking possibilities facing the NPA. I'm calling it convergence of shrinking possibilities. You have no finances. The staff and capacity issues are a challenge. Whilst you have that, on the other hand, based on your mandate, there's an expectation from all of us, including citizens, because your mandate is about it's about the NPA that must institute criminal proceedings on behalf of the state. That's key in your mandate. This is what we're expecting you to do when you have got all of those things. Now, Member Breitenbach made the point, and I want to emphasize it. It was one of the things you said you are 8 months into that position. And it's not 8 months of somebody who's there for the first time. You've been there before. You come from that. So it's an 8 months of a comeback. There would never have been a honeymoon from where I'm studying. If there was a honeymoon, it would have been around. So I'm emphasizing that point. Because in 8 months, you can do what I want to propose, Chair. In 8 months, this is the proposal, that are you able to come back to us before we rise in November as this committee and present the following to the committee? And it's a two-pronged plan. Present a medium to long plan, because there are a lot of things that must be done. You need to come and tell us what priorities can you drive, given all of this, what is there. So come back and present to us that here is my plan, because there's still a lot of things that are going to come even from the State Capture Commission. This report is not helping us to attend to those issues. Unless you are saying, in addition to the 8 months, you still need another, I'm not looking for 2020. I'm looking for 2019 November, that you come back and say, this is how I'm going to deal with the acting issues, with the issue of capacity, with all of those, and my plan to turn this ship around. So that's my A part. The B part of what I request that you come back and talk to us about is, how are you going to deal with the low-hanging fruits? Things that don't need money, they are there to be driven, they need to happen. There are lots of those kind of things, where you don't need to go and recruit prosecutors to do that. Are you in a position, I want you to be able, I'm raising it up front so that you can apply your mind when you respond. Are you in a position to come back before the end of November, Chair, through you, Chair, to come to this committee and present a plan? I don't have it, I'm missing it. We need that plan. As I'm saying, 8 months is a good time for a plan to be produced. Anybody who cannot produce a plan in 8 months, then should not be in that position. I hope I'm clear on that one, Chair. And as part of that, what you're going to have to bring to us, and please indicate the kind of risk that you think we need to know about. And as I leave that, I want to, before I go to the report, because I'm going to be getting into this report and not the presentation, one of the risks that I already think you need to tell us about is what has come out in the media, which is from where I'm sitting is an unfortunate thing. Is there truth in the media reports that says he's spending a lot of money on the director of investigation, Herman Cronier, in terms of her accommodation in Johannesburg every week, and that she's not relocated to Johannesburg, and therefore you're forced to do that? Is there truth in that? And if there is truth in that, can you then explain to us how you're dealing with that situation? So I leave that there. And now let me just quickly go to the questions, Chair. Hopefully I've made sense about what I... Again, perhaps just to start with on your foreword, Advocate Batoy, you make a point about that the organization has been in a state of crisis due to additional pressures, including financial constraints. Now, I would want you to explain, elaborate on that. Is there a crisis in the organization, and again, you'll explain that when you come back. Is the crisis in the organization only a financial one? Aren't you having a crisis of, as you said, of leadership and the direction of this organization? Because it doesn't mean that in the last 5 years, 10 years, there were problems of money. There's certainly no problem of money. There was a problem of something else that brought us here. And if we're going to be hiding everything behind finances, we are going to have the wrong diagnosis. And I would like you to elaborate on that, because it comes back later on when you ask other questions. On your report, and I'm on this book, just a cosmetic one, Che, on the structure, just a cosmetic comment, question, in that in the structure, I see you don't put yourself in this structure. It's a former minister for that matter, and you're not in this structure, and yet you have a foreword. So I don't understand that you have a foreword that you, and somebody, and Ramaite is the one who's in charge of this. I'm calling it cosmetic, because I think and then on the issue that has been raised by colleagues about the convictions, which the Chief Justice said he raised that with you and you agreed. So, but for me, it's more of a change of a language. So instead of convictions, can we now start talking about enrollments of cases? Because you're not convicting, which is true, but you do enroll, because that's in your domain. Because it's not going to take away the kind of good work that he's doing. The language can change, but you can still do the kind of good work that you do. It's just a... And then share on page 32. I'm on that page now. I'm trying to go page by page in the areas that I've highlighted. Hopefully you brought your book. I am not going to the presentation at all. That's not my space. My space is the book that you sent us. So I'm on page 32 now. And on that page, I'm interested in just maybe give us more reasons. There are two categories at the bottom of that page, figure 3, cases finalized by the High Court. The withdrawals, which is 68, as well as the acquitted, which is 97. And I would like to get a more explanation on that. Then the next page I want to go to, Chair, is on... on page 38 in your report, and here it's dealing with and the heading on it is conviction rate in complex commercial crimes. My concern there is that there seems to be a growing sketch of the very same people who are supposed to be doing this work who themselves are found on the wrong side of the law, whether it's prosecutors, it's police, who get involved into bribes, how are we dealing with that kind of a sketch? And then the next page would be on page 46. The heading there is a murder rate. No, it's not. It's a conviction rate in violent protests and industrial actions prosecuted. The case I'm referring to is that one of the state versus Shabangu and others. And here, the issue seems to be murder. And this has got nothing to do with violent protest. And that's why this issue is recorded under violent protest when it is pure murder. That will be the issue I want to raise, Chair. And then the next page will be on 51 and 52. I'm concerned about the state versus Abrams and eight others. In the conclusion of this case, in the way you've written here, seems that Abrams was arrested twice on the same case before he went to court and was arrested. And then secondly, there's no indication as to what happened to Abrams in the case that you are reporting there. My next page from that one, it's quickly going to page 61. In cases on top there, in cases where there were acquittals, it transpired during evidence that witnesses might have a motive to falsely implicate the accused due to prior events the prosecutor was not aware of. And my question is, how is this being dealt with? If this is a particular problem that you are facing with, and I go to specialized prosecutions from page 69. And I go to page 71. There's just a clarity that I'm not happy about there. In all other cases, because this is a case, the state versus Cesani. And the way you've written up this case, we're now told in this case who he is related to. So you're saying the accused is the wife of the current ambassador to Germany. So the ambassador to Germany has nothing to do with this. It is the wife. And all of a sudden we're told who, and in all other cases we're not told who they are related to. Why is this? You should take this out. It's a wrong way of writing it down, because why are you choosing to do this in this case? Is it because it's an ambassador? When you did not do it in all other cases. I thought that was a poor way of putting that. And then I go to page 93, Chair. This deals with the issue of the value of money, natural, in terms of the witness protection office. I'm particularly just curious about quarter two. Quarter one, you had a number of jail terms was 41. Quarter two was 579. And the next was 80, the other one was 49. So what was happening in quarter two that you had so many jail terms? Is there something special that you did? I'm just, as I said, I'm just curious. I want to understand what was happening there. And then on the finances, you've explained the issue of the 150 million environment. This issue of environment, I even raised it even with legal aid. 150 million environmented in 12 months. Again, goes back to the bad planning and bad budgeting. I mean, how do you environment 150 million even if we're talking about 8% of the criteria? The fact that so much money had to be violated says there's a problem in that particular section and in the way things were done. And then I go to page 109, I start there, the personnel position of the NPA. I think Honorable Mohammed and others have raised this. You've got serious challenges here. In fact, even not only at head office, but even across provinces. The vacancy, there is no particular province that is less than 10%, which is a norm. So everybody else starts from 16 and above. And this is not only about skills. It's not about prosecutors. Even the administrative support in the head office, in fact, that's the highest. It's 35% vacancy. So you can't even argue and say, no, we're not able to get these skills. No, they leave and so on. Does this point explain the point you're making about leadership crisis in the NPA? If it does, please don't respond. Bring us a plan. I really want to go there, Chair. And then I'm on page 115. The nature of misconduct. Misconduct in the NPA. So suppose we were holding you at a higher level, with higher standards. So I'm looking at all of these. Firstly, the issue of negligence, bringing the name of the NPA into disrepute. What did this person do? What are the details of what he did to bring the into disrepute? Breach of confidentiality in the NPA. On what was this? I don't need the name of the person, but I think I'm looking at the issues that we're dealing with. The financial misconduct, a failure to declare financial interest. That's still on page 115. What levels of these? And boy, they're about 116 of them in the NPA. Or am I? Yes. What levels and what consequences? This is a failure to disclose financial interest. Well, that's where problems start. I'll pause there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Verma.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the NPA for the presentation. Most of my colleagues have covered me and in relation to the Tutuzela Care Center, but there are a few more questions related to the TCC that I'd like to raise. In light of what the Chief Justice has said about the need for TCCs that are fit for the intended purposes, what did he mean by that? In relation to what the Chief Justice has said, I'd like to get a detailed explanation about the TCC model, how they operate, and how the TCC operates. And what are the challenges that the TCCs have? In terms of the NPA's assessment of all the centres, what are the needs in the centres? What should be improved so that they can function optimally? Because I'm not sure what the Chief Justice had meant, so that's why I would like a detailed explanation of the model. And the impact of the centres, the impact to fight the scourge of gender-based violence. Is the capability there or is it not? And what do they need to make this impact? And also in terms of what was reported, the amount of $16 million received from CARA to fund the TCC project. And that includes setting up 5 new sites. And it also includes current maintenance of current facilities and upgrade of current facilities. Could we get details of that particular development? I'm new to this committee, so I'm not sure where all the centres are based. So if you could make some other members also be interested in the information of where the TCCs are based, so we know where to find them, in the different provinces. Thank you, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. To be fair to the NPA, we will just give them 5-10 minutes break so that they can reorganize themselves. There are quite a number of questions that were asked. It will be a comfort break so that they can be able to reorganize themselves properly. And then after 10 minutes, then we will get the answers from the NPA, from the questions asked by Honourable Members. We will come back. It's now 12:30, 20 to 1. 20 to